It's good to see your face. I haven't seen you in or talked to you. We had a week off because you just can't. I can't get over your schedule. It's just it's intimidating to me as your friend and as your fellow podcast host that I
especially
can't get
someone
on your
who travels
schedule.
Their ass off too. You are, you know, it's nutty. I mean, I'm used to it though. You know, I did a show called Nashville a while back, and I was doing the same thing. I was just flying much further. You know, it was 4 hours, and this is only an hour and a half. So I'm in Albuquerque, then L.A., then I was just in Laguna Beach for Wilder's birthday. And, you know, it's their first day of school today. So we took Rio to school this morning at 8:15. We do this podcast. Then I take Bodie at 10:45. Then I come home. Then I take Wilder at 12.
Why are they staggered like that? Why?
It's just the first day. It's like orientations for each grade, and it's, you know, it's one of those. So it won't be like that.
Do you ever get over that first day jitter as a parent? You know, I don't. I've gone through it. We've documented this 1,000 times. Going through it again, but when you kind of push them out of the nest, I don't care what grade they're in. You're always holding your breath to how the other kids are going to be, you know, they're going to fight. And now I know there's a lot of returning friends. There's going to be new kids. There's a new dynamic. And it's always a little sketchy and a little intimidating, I think, both to kid and parent to know what you're going to deal with as the year goes on.
Yeah. Well, Rio is going into second grade. The only one who is new to the school is Bodie. My middle. This is the first time that they've all been at the same school ever. So Bodie's brand new into sixth grade at this new school, but he's so fucking easy. I'm like, are you nervous? He's like, no, I'm excited. I'm like, why are you excited? He goes, I don't know, it's new people. Just, you know, I'm excited. So he's just got a whole different vibe. Wilder is entering eighth grade. A new man. I mean, he's gone through puberty, and his voice is deep. He's gained 17 pounds. He's grew 4 inches, and, you know, all he cares about is his hair. He's wearing my Egyptian musk oils. He's like, Dad, I want cologne. I'm like, I got something better, dude.
Your kid is going to eighth grade wearing cologne?
He wanted cologne. I didn't get him cologne. I have these essential oils that I've had since I was in my 20s. I used to wear them when I was single, Egyptian musk, and I smelled so fucking good that I didn't even need to look good. I just needed to smell good. It was like this attractant. I was just, you know. And so he's like, he put it on. Now he's wearing that shit to school, Egyptian musk in the eighth grade.
That is phenomenal. That might be the best thing you've ever said on this podcast. And that's saying a lot because we've done and said a lot here. But that your eighth grade son, it says everything about you, too, that he's all slick down. He's ready to kind of walk in, doors swinging open like the sheriff walking into a Wild West saloon. And, hey, come on, ladies, it's Egyptian musk.
Yeah.
That's great.
I just have to, before he goes to school, I have to tell him, don't say Egyptian musk. It sounds too crazy. You know what I mean? Like, if someone says, oh my God, you smell so good, what are you wearing? We just got to make it up. Maybe EM or I don't know. Because if you're
blame it on Axe body spray. I mean, you can blame everything on Axe body spray, especially at that age. You know, it's mixing with my skin, and I have my own natural pheromones and chemicals coming out. And, you know, when you put this Axe Cool Mist onto my body, I smell like, Indiana Jones going through the Temple of Doom.
Well, he wanted that. He wanted Axe. And I'm like, dude, we got to do you one better than Axe. You know, just here's some essential oils from 1998.
He went to Egypt.
Yeah, exactly.
Think how that shit is aged, too. I mean, if it's probably aged like a fine wine. So you may be discovering something that even the ancient Egyptians never knew, that if you store their musk for 20 plus years, it comes out as, you know, he may, he's going to show up in the car at the end of the day, mm-hmm. just hickeys all over his neck and shirt ripped off.
Totally.
Dad, this was amazing. This is the best first day of my life.
So he's, you know, he's prepping and he's got his whole hair routine down now where he washes his hair and then he brushes it and then he puts it into the perfect position and then he has to let it air dry. So when he walks around the house, you know, while it's drying, it's almost like he's in a neck brace. He doesn't even move. He doesn't move his neck because he doesn't want his hair to get out of place.
Oh, my God. This is so great. I could talk about this for a day because it just – I can't wait to go through this with my little boys. You know, the best thing about my girls going to Catholic school is they had a uniform. So it was never – it was almost like, why are they going to Catholic school? You know, the number one overriding reason so that every day was not a fashion show. It was uniform. They slop in. It's all mm-hmm. girls. They slop out. They do their work. And school is not like, my daughter's hair was by the time they're seniors, it's just like a rat's nest and they mm-hmm. don't care. And I think eliminating that was a good thing for us and for them.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, there's definitely that. And then the other side of that coin is, you know, there is something about expression creatively with your clothes and how you look and just dealing with the perils of putting on something wrong and taking a chance and being like, oh, shit, that didn't work.
That's so great. Well, our guest today, you know, is Troy Aikman. We're going to be joined by him here in a couple minutes, but you and I need to talk about the airing of our Family mm-hmm. Feud episode.
Oh yeah.
There's no way we can go through this without, and I'm scared because there's so many things to say about it and I don't want Troy to jump on in the middle of it, but I'm getting just destroyed on the internet as being a sexist asshole who doesn't listen to his wife, his sister, and his two daughters. Meanwhile, I'm like, I'm the one that got invited, and I could have brought anybody. Clearly, Oliver brought three of his friends. I chose to bring my little nest of women that I have around me.
Of course. First of all, to be clear, my family, there's no chance in hell that my family would ever go and do that. I would, because I have fun with these
but
things.
But no Kate Hudson, no Goldie Hawn.
No Goldie Hawn, no Kurt Russell, no Wyatt. You know what I mean? Like, I've got my wife and then my three boys, you know?
Right.
But I didn't think about that when we were doing it. And then I watched it this morning, actually. And I was like, oh, yeah, Joe will get destroyed for this just because he's such a target anyway. And now you're not listening to your girls, you know? And it's like, oh, you sexist bastard.
Right. Which is absurd because here's whose answer I went with. My youngest daughter, that was my youngest daughter's answer. That was not my mm-hmm. answer. That was her mm-hmm. answer. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, we gathered, you guys had your three strikes. We come out of it and Michelle goes, Steve, can we huddle again? Because we had nothing. We were going to say teacher. And so that was the last answer your side had.
Yeah, we
did. And it was X'd out. Now it's like, oh God, now what do? We had teacher locked and loaded. They said teacher and it wasn't up there. And we come up with nothing. And Trudy's like, my best friend. Mm-hmm. So then we come out. Michelle goes, can we huddle again? Mm-hmm. We go back in and Natalie, I think, said boss. Mm-hmm. And I come out of there going, all right, I guess I'll go boss. But my thought was nobody admits in a survey or believes that their boss is actually smarter than them. Everybody's like, oh, my boss is a moron. My boss is, doesn't matter, male, female, whatever, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so the question was, you're answering what you think other people will respond with, not how you feel. So I thought, I don't know if the people are going to just openly say they think they're not as smart as their boss. So I'm going to go with Trudy's answer of best friend. Well, then my girls just freak out because we had, in a pinch, come up with boss, which was the right answer. Good God. It's just, you just can't win for losing. I've said that before. I don't understand that phrase, but it fits somehow here.
Oh, dude.
It was funny. It was great. I mean, you couldn't have asked for anything better to happen. You know, I mean,
that it was up there. Yeah. It was good TV.
It's good TV. It's good TV.
And I went on Twitter for a minute, and most of it was fine. But then you get the every 10th one is like really harsh. And some woman like, you're an asshole. You're a sexist asshole. You're a sports guy, typical sports guy. And I wanted to engage.
Don't
She's in the media in Minneapolis. And I'm like,
right.
I'm the one that brought my girls. I'm the one that that showed up with four women. And I listened to my daughter, part two, not my oldest daughter, and now we lose.
Oh, please. I mean, absolutely don't fucking engage with that insanity. I mean, that's
where we are.
Absurd.
It's a bigger point. It's like people want to paint you with this gigantic brush, which they don't know any of the specifics of what went on on that show, in that huddle, who said what. That's just the way it is. It's just
Well,
nuts.
Forget about even the show or the huddle. I mean, whoever's painting you is this kind of a person, obviously, has no idea who you fucking are. So it's just ridiculous. I mean, they don't know Joe Buck. It's just fucking stupid. You know what I mean? If I did the same thing, I would not have gotten that kind of shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just because I'm not like a target, like you are a target. And so, what the fuck ever. We had fun. You won money for your charity. I won money for my mama and her charity. And we had a great dinner afterwards. And it was
and
a
we
fucking
tried
blast.
To promote the podcast. We tried to promote. We had a lot of funny stuff, I will say, of interaction between our two families and you and me that was cut out.
They cut out a bunch of stuff. They cut out the intros. And I mean, I guess I didn't watch the one before. I don't know if they took some more time with their intros and stuff.
Well, you know why they cut out your intros? They played my intros to my family. You know why? Because my family didn't get to play. We lost every head-to-head thing. So my poor sister, I will say my daughters were excited to go on. I was excited to go on. Kind of. Michelle was excited to go on. My sister, like, this made her life. And she's in the fifth spot and never said a word.
Not
on
one
the show.
Word. Not one word. Ugh.
And here's the other thing. Had I said my boss and we won and went to the finals, there was already stress in my group and in my mind, you know how I think, of who was going to play the final round thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Fast money or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Michelle was kind of going, no, let Julie do it. So it was going to be Julie and me, and then my wife is not in it. I was just like, on one hand, it was a nightmare. On the other hand, I'm glad I didn't even have to make Sophie's choice there of my sister and my wife.
Oh my God, I know. Well, you should just put both up and you just
I wanted
back.
To do that. And Michelle's like, no, they want you to do it. They invited you. And I'm
yeah,
like,
it's true.
Well, so what? It doesn't matter. We're in the game now. You guys go do it.
It doesn't even matter. The fact that your sister was a huge fan of the show, was so excited to come up and didn't
Kills
even
me.
Get any airtime. It's
Kills
fucking
me.
Crazy.
So I mean, of all the people, I should have put her first. But then, you know, you did it the right way, which was actually the wrong way, because it's Family Feud, not me and some friends feud.
I asked them, though, when they said, I said, look, my family's not coming on. If they're cool with me bringing some friends and my wife, I'll do it. And then they said, okay.
Your order was easy. Mine was like, you're picking between your daughters and your wife and your sister, who's the one that's all geeked up to be there. It was just like, ugh.
Well, I was thinking about it. You got to go Michelle first, then your sister, you know?
Then my
and
girls?
And then your girls, yeah. Yeah, because even if your girls are giving you shit, it's like, you guys, look. This is Julie's, like, dream fucking come true. She's got to be on the air. You have a long life. You're both in the movie industry. You're going to be on camera. You know, with some luck, you're going to be famous, okay? Julie needs to be on fucking camera.
Right. That ship has sailed. My ship has sailed. I am what I am. She is what she is. Couldn't be happier. Oh, look, it's Troy.
Hello.
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 Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more Daddy Issues.
Have we talked about this Family Feud episode yet?
We were just doing it. We were just recapping. But just so you know, yeah, that was good for everybody except me.
But that's why it was good. I feel like I can speak for Oliver on this one. Because, you know, he and I, we're used to looking like that. You know, I mean, you never look like that. So for you to, you know, that was one of those moments that I've been with you 20 years. I've never seen something like that.
Oh, God. It was just horrible. And what you don't know is we came out of our first quote-unquote huddle. You've run one of those huddles before, Troy, and we couldn't come up with an answer. And Michelle goes, "Steve, can we huddle again?" He goes, "Sure, go ahead," which they don't have in there. And then Trudy was the one that said, "My best friend." Natalie said, "My boss." Everybody's like, "Okay, my boss." We weren't really gung-ho about it because I thought, who admits in the world that their boss is smarter than them? Except for everybody that worked for you at the Ford dealership. Trust me.
Yeah, right.
But I come out, I'm like, I don't know. Are people really going to admit that they're boss? So I went with Trudy's answer, which was my best friend, and now I'm the internet asshole.
Here's what the problem is. Now you're just throwing Trudy under the bus, so you're going to get a double whammy here.
I don't care. She's my kid. Yeah, it was not good, Troy.
You just, you know, in times of a storm, you just stay off social media is my philosophy.
That's right.
Yeah.
We've had our own.
Yeah,
it's fun. It's funny. You and I have talked about that, and this isn't a show about social media, but when you do a game, and when we do a game, especially when I do a baseball game, it's like you want a little bit of time to go by so all the "you suck, you hate my team" things can come rolling in. Now you can get on Twitter 4 days later, 3 days later, and you can kind of just wipe those away with one click. You go to the top, you may see one nasty one, and then you start over. It's like those other people didn't exist.
Yeah, no, that's kind of the approach. I do think that for me, though, a little bit, I don't know if it is this way for you, but if I feel like I've had a good game, if I feel like I did my job and was proud of the work that I put in that game, I'll go look at social media. And rarely will anything even get my attention, no matter how negative it is, because I just feel like, whatever. I mean, I feel good about what I did. But if there's those games where, I kind of screwed this up or didn't get this right, then you go back and you read it. And then if somebody is commenting on that, that's when I feel like it really kind of hurts, because I know they're right. You know, I know like, I was hoping nobody noticed that, you know, one of those type deals. But yeah, I think.
But that's healthy.
It is healthy. I'd be curious, because for Oliver.
You've got good self-worth. You know what I mean? Because you're not basing your performance on the fucking warriors behind the keyboards. It's like, oh, I felt good. Fuck everyone else. Or I felt bad. Okay. They have a point.
Yeah. So like in the world that I lived in as a player, even though social media wasn't there, but these guys now certainly are dealing with it. And then in broadcasting, you know, everyone's a critic, and the fantasy football has really brought out the criticism of the players if a player doesn't make a play. But I'm curious for you, Oliver. I mean, as far as social media, do you get a lot of negative on your feeds? People.
So funny you asked that. I was with some friends this weekend, and they asked that exact question, and the answer is no. I mean, it's crazy to say.
Life's like good.
You go through my comments, and I mean, it's never anything bad or negative, because I think that's just how I've presented myself, is just this sort of out there, you know, unrestrained person who's just going to be himself. So I get passes all over the place, I guess. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not being critiqued. If you don't like me, then I guess just stop following. But no one ever says, like, you're a fucking this, or you did this, or,
which is great. I mean, so you've carved out a path a little bit like Jack Nicholson, to where, you know, I mean, he can take a 3-iron to a motorist's car, and they just say, you know, that's Jack. Come on. Yeah. It's no big deal. And that's Oliver.
Yeah, I got lucky.
It was good.
But I do think that when you do sports – you know, people are stuck with Troy and me if they're watching the big game, and right. and we're having comments.
That worded a little bit differently.
Okay, people have to listen to us if we're doing the game on national TV, but inevitably one side is going to be really mad because their team just lost, and if you say anything, you know, that's critical, or if, you know, in my case, I'm jumping up and down because a team just won. You've got half the fan base. It's going, hey, F you. You're why are you so excited? My team lost. If they're going to follow you, Oliver, they're probably going to be a fan of yours to some degree. Nobody's stuck, you know, on a right. Sunday watching you call their games. If they are a fan of you, they watch your stuff and they follow you. And if not, then you don't even exist to them. So it's a different experience altogether.
And I get it. You know, I mean, I totally get it because I don't get – you know, when I watch a sporting event, I think that's what makes sports so great. But rarely am I just absolutely like fanatical for the outcome of a game. Typically, most events that I watch, I've got a little bit of a rooting interest at times when I'm watching it at my house, but not often. But then I'm watching, for instance, a UCLA game, and I'm fully invested on wanting to see them win. And then when something happens and the announcer says, yeah, that, you know, I kind of said, oh, no way, I wasn't. So I do get why people react the way that they do. I guess the thing that surprises me, and it always has surprised me, is that someone then actually takes the time to go type out, you know, this this venom that they have for a broadcaster. That's the part where I just say, wow, they are really committed to this thing. So, but it's great. It's great for sports. It's been great for getting people involved.
When did you and Joe start? Like, what was your first game? What was
Oliver,
your first
we
game?
We started in our first game together. You know, I retired in 2000, and then I worked the 2001 season with Daryl Johnston, a former teammate of mine with the Cowboys, and Dick Stockton was our play-by-play guy, and had a blast. You know, just had a it was such a unique situation to be working alongside a guy who came into the NFL the same year as I did. We were teammates for all those years, and it was fun. And then Madden all of a sudden left the very next year, and they put Joe, myself, and Chris Collinsworth in the number one booth. So it happened really quickly for me to be the number two guy 1 year, and the very next year to be the number one guy. And then worked with Chris for 3 years in a three-man booth, and then he left for NBC. And then Joe and I have been in a two-man booth ever since. So it's crazy. This is our 20th year.
Did it take you some time to get to know your rhythms and your, you know what I mean? Because obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so every play-by-play guy is different. I'm sure Joe would say probably every analyst is different, but I start talking when Joe finishes talking, and then I'm supposed to be done talking before the snap of the next play. And there'll be, you know, I know Joe's cadence doesn't happen right away, but now, so if he pauses, I know that he's not done talking. I know that he has more that he wants to say. And so I lay out, let him kind of finish, and it works really well. And I think the viewers, those that aren't critiquing us on Twitter, I think they feel the chemistry with Joe and I, which makes it a little bit easier listen, I suppose. But then when Joe leaves and does baseball, then I work with someone else, and it's a little different for me. I mean, it's a little odd because I know, like, when we start a game, Joe usually talks right up until the kickoff, and then you know, it comes out. So I just kind of lay out the whole time. Then all of a sudden, somebody's bringing me into it, and it just, all of the cadence is totally different when you're working with someone differently.
It's funny how that all works out because you don't ever map it out, and it does take a little bit of time, but it doesn't take long. And I feel like he can read me like he would read a receiver, and I can read him like I would read, you know, I've never played in the NFL, obviously, but somebody that's next to me, I can tell by a slight movement that he makes, and I don't even know what it is. Sometimes he'll lift his hand. Sometimes he'll just lean in toward the field, and I know. And there are times where it kills me because I can't get my words out, and I can't say it quick enough to allow him more time to do his thing, and I'm stammering around and I'm trying to get there. And when I do that, sometimes I'll grab him like by the arm, like, hey, sorry about that. But there's a lot of subtle body language that happens with millions of people watching that I think would actually kind of be fascinating if you were to put a camera on us from behind and you would just watch us work. And then you could lay the sound in later. You would see just subtle things that happen between two guys that have been in high pressure situations on air for a long time now. This is our 20th season together. There are things happening that we're probably not conscious of, but it's going on, and it allows us to not step on each other. You know, really hardly ever. Which is
Have you ever had a moment though where there's been a miscue or a cross up, and you not get upset with each other, but be like, Joe, what the fuck, man? Or you know, anything like that ever? Or is it all just gravy all the time? No.
Well, I mean, I'll speak for me. I feel like I could speak for both of us that we've never had a cross word ever, you know, not because we're not capable of reacting that way, or, you know, that we're just laissez-faire about it all. We just have a great deal of respect. We get along. I think that, you know, Joe knows that I respect what he's trying to accomplish, and I have his best interest, and I know that he has my best interest. So there's times when, you know, if I go down something and I know that Joe wanted to get in there and I kind of screwed it up, like he's saying, the hardest part at times is just trying to wrap up your thoughts. Once you go down a road, you can't just leave it hanging out there. So you're trying to wrap it up. And sometimes it happens to me too, where I know he wants to get in there and say something, and I may screw that up for him. And sometimes there's those moments that are big moments. And when you miss them, you know, you don't get them back. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I'll be quick to say to him, look, yeah, I'm sorry. Didn't do it. And he'll do the same for me, but that's rare. You know, we kind of together.
What about when Randy Moss peed on the goalpost and he did his thing? were you like, shit,
he didn't pee on the goal. He didn't pee on the goalpost.
I'm just saying when you said that, Troy must've been like, this isn't going to be good. I don't know.
Well, God. No, I'll be totally honest with you on that one, Oliver. You know, so we were working with Collinsworth that year, and the it happened, right? The touchdown happens, and I'm immediately like talking to the truck about something that I wanted to see. So I had my head down, and then Joe reacted the way that he did, and I kind of was like, the hell just happened?
No, well, first, no, what first happened was Collinsworth. Collinsworth is doing it. He goes, and Randy Moss shoots the moon at the fans in Green Bay. And then I reacted off kind of both what I saw and then Chris saying that, like, hey, let's not go down this path of showing 9 different angles of him mooning the crowd in the end zone at Lambeau Field. And there are no, I mean, on one hand, I've answered for this. I think that happened in 04, somewhere in there. Maybe January of 04?
Well, 04 would have been at the latest, right? So that would have been the latest last year, the possible, because Chris's last year was 04.
Yeah, so it might have been the 03 season. I think it was 04, but it might have been the playoffs that started in early 04. But so I've answered for this forever. And I'm like, on one hand, I hear it and I'm like, ugh, it's too much. I cringe. On the other hand, I'm like, I don't think in 2021 – I would have the balls to say that, even mm-hmm. if that's what I felt in my core. I just reacted. And Randy and I, thank God, you know, he's a coworker of Michelle's, and we get along great. Of all the guys that are there that interact with Michelle, he's hands down the best. But I'm surprised that I said it on one hand, and then I'm kind of proud that I said it on the other, because I think things have changed so much, and there have been so many constraints put on us, whether it's social media or whatever, that you rarely step out of that middle lane and have a really, if you want to call it a hot take, you really ever say anything that has real teeth to it. So I cringe a little, and then I'm like, man, I'm kind of impressed that I said what I said, because that's how I felt, and I don't think I would say that in 2021. Yeah, so maybe I've gotten worse.
No, you'd get canceled. I mean, that's what
I'd be done.
You know,
I'd be done.
And I just have one request as we go into this 2021 season. Can you do maybe just a quarter? I was going to say a game, but maybe just one quarter of Chris Collinsworth in one of these games. Just do that impersonation.
Come on, man. Oh, come on. I mean, he's so great. And we went through so many things together that should be in a book.
I've talked with him a couple different times here over the last few weeks, you know, like an hour at a time. I've had some really great conversations with him.
Oh, now you get along. Now you get along.
Funny stuff listening to him.
I mean, oh, my God.
His perspective, Oliver. And pretty good.
Oliver, I was stuck between these two guys. They are A types. They are dominant people, Troy Aikman and Chris Collinsworth, both great broadcasters. You know, both great players, but they have opinions. So their opinions did not always match up, which made for great TV, in my opinion, but also made for a little bit of stress. And I was always feeling like I had to go back between the two guys, like, well, what Chris really meant to say when he said this, or what Troy really, and finally we get out of it. Now we're all, you know, great friends. And I don't know. It's funny that
Hold on. It's funny you say that because, you know, everyone gives you shit for being biased, even though you're absolutely not. But what if you flipped it? What if you leaned into that? What if you had two announcers who actually cared about the other team and would get into it on air, you know, with a lot of knowledge? That would be amazing to watch, honestly.
Well, ESPN kind of does that. They have simulcasts that go on where they will pull in somebody from – it happens a lot on the collegiate level, but now it's going to happen in the NFL because Peyton Manning's going to have a show with Eli Manning, and it's going to be like almost counter-programming to their own programming, which is kind of crazy to me that you've got a game, your own announcers, and then over on here on ESPN2 or whatever it is, click into that if you want to listen to Peyton and Eli talk about it and not the guys that we actually hire and pay money to cover the game. It's like, what? Right. Wait, what?
Yeah.
It's strange to me.
Fox isn't doing that, are they?
God, I hope not. I hope not. But, you know, I was just thinking when we're talking about kind of that subtle nature of working together in a high-pressure thing, I'm sure it's not that different than in the acting world, Oliver, because – you know, if Troy screws something up royally or I screw something up royally, I go back to my early days with Tim Green when I was doing games and he and I were just figuring it out. And if he struggled, well, then we struggled. And I hate that feeling. I could call a perfect game, but if my partner, on-air partner, is not, you know, is not having a great game, then we don't have a great game. And so that's why you have to play off each other and highlight each other's strengths. And I would imagine, you know, when you're doing a scene with somebody, you're really dependent. And that's why, you know, the old age-old actors thing line of, oh, they're just so giving. And they're just, oh, I love doing this scene with Daniel Day-Lewis. He's such a giving actor. But because you're only as good as what they're giving you, and you have to play off that. So we're doing that same thing. We're just doing it live to action that we're not controlling, which makes the job that much harder.
Actually, it's an interesting point you bring up because you guys have the luxury of being together in the booth for that many years and really learning each other and liking each other. If you guys had a bad relationship, just even personally, this wouldn't be 20 years in the making. No. It would have ended. So as an actor, you know, I've been lucky. There's been moments where the people on set have not been so great, but for the most part, I have never had a really bad experience. But I mean, I'd say probably 30% of the time, you've got actors working together who don't even fucking like each other. Sometimes there are things that go down where egos clash, someone's in their trailer too long, or whatever's happening, and you have to be in love with this person, and you just do not like them, but you have to, quote unquote, act. That happens all the time, you know, where you just not, it's your best friend or whatever, and you're like, I hate this dude. He's just, I don't like him as a human being, but now I gotta love him and hug him, you know, and that's my boy.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break. Well, Troy and I have been through, and it's why I was excited to have Troy on for a million reasons, but we've been through a lot of the same life experiences. But I think what we really bond over, other than what we do at work, is that we're dads to two daughters. And he's seen my girls grow up. I've seen his girls grow up. I can say this, and I've said it many times publicly. Of all the things that Troy Aikman is great at, and it's a long list, not the least of which is being a Hall of Fame quarterback and a Super Bowl champion. What he's best at is being a dad and really, really stepping up when his girls need him. And now I'm anxious because we haven't really talked, Troy, much, and that's going to change here soon, about being an empty nester because his youngest, Allie, just left. Now she's down the street at a local school, but... man, what is that like, and how is it going for Allie there at SMU?
Well, Allie's doing great, and thank you for saying that. I about being a father. I said, you know, Joe knows this. I said it at his wedding the night before.
I got invited to that.
Yeah, he was.
So when I got paired with Joe, I mean, I knew that he was a great broadcaster. What I didn't know was what a great father he was. And in a lot of ways, you know, he's been a role model in that regard. I mean, he's a guy that I talk about him as though he's not on the call right now, but has really helped me a lot professionally as a broadcaster. But then on the personal side, just seeing him as a dad with his girls, and his girls are a little bit older than mine. So that is the glue, I guess, at our core that allows us to have the relationship that we have. And I think it's why I have so much respect for him. And I think it's probably why he has so much respect for me. But to go back to the question, so I'll be an empty nester. My first night as an empty nester will be tomorrow night.
Wow.
Jordan. So Allie's off at SMU, which is her high school. Her high school was further away than her college. So, I don't know. I don't really know how that works just yet, but she's already gone off. She went last week. Jordan, my oldest, leaves tomorrow to go back for her sophomore year at Washington and Lee. And so this will be a new experience for me because for the first time in the football season, I won't feel pressure to get back home as soon as possible. So as soon as games would end, I'd be back getting home just as soon as I could. And now if I want to spend an extra day or so somewhere, I can do that. I can travel. So I'm, you know, it's a new phase. You know, anytime you hit these different phases of life, it kind of gets your attention. And this one has me, but it's one I'm looking forward to. I'm kind of excited about, you know, them growing and maturing and experiencing new things and kind of leaving the nest and figuring things out for themselves a little bit. And then
you can only hope that you've done the right job, you know, because now they're going to college and you're like, okay, I did all I can do. Now you are off into the real world and it can be scary at times, especially now with social media and just access, so much access. You know, I mean, does that worry you or do you feel confident in your skills and in your girl's personalities that they're going to, you know, carve a good path?
Yeah, it's such a great point. And I totally agree that you get them to this point and you hope that you did a good enough job to where they're mature enough and make good decisions and are responsible and all those things. But I also, I have a lot of friends who are much older than I am, whose kids are now into their 40s and there are some, not many, but there are a few that I know who their kids were great kids all the way through high school. They went off to college and just got in with the wrong crowd. And this is so I've been told that, you know, hey, the kids are kind of they're molded now. I mean, they kind of are what they are. And you don't have to worry about those things. And my girls are good girls. And, you know, I also understand that every parent thinks that. But I do feel they're responsible, and I just hope that, like any parent, that they just continue to make good decisions. I try to remind that of them, but I also try to give them enough leash that they can go kind of figure it out for themselves. They're going to make some mistakes. Hell, we all did. I mean,
oh yeah.
And now we just have an ability to track these kids a little bit better than what our parents
I love it.
Were able to do. And that's kind of a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you think, man, if I didn't know where they were, I'd be totally bliss. And, you know, all that. But now that you know, you're kind of thinking, okay, you know, do I comment on this or not? But so far, so good.
I know. It's true. These apps now, we have this thing called Life 360. So
that's
I know
what
where
I
all,
have. Yeah.
Yeah. I know where all, I know where my kids are, you know,
when
it's kind of great.
What time they're getting back to the dorm, you know, I mean, all that stuff. It is.
I
great.
Know, but at what point are your girls like, Dad? Okay, Life 360 was great when we were younger, and now we're at college, and I'm not going to have you tracking me to Sigma Chi, you know, and know that I'm leaving at 4 a.m.
Well, if they watch this podcast, which they will, I'm sure, they'll now know. But I don't let them know that I actually know. You know, I let them think that I never look at Life 360. So they, you know, now the cat's out of the bag. They'll
there are other apps.
Yeah.
All they're going to do is they're going to hand their phone, they're going to pay somebody to hand their phone to. You just sit in the dorm and I'm going to go out. And Dad will think I'm sitting here in Johnson Hall on the second
These
floor.
Kids couldn't possibly live without their phones.
No, that's a good point.
No. No. Did you always want to be a dad? I mean, is that something that was important to you early on?
100%. Yeah, I always wanted to be a father. It's always been really the most important part. Even when I was much younger, when I was in my mid 20s, I mean, I just always knew I wanted to be a father. And then once I had children, my personal circumstances warranted it changed kind of my perspective even more so, and it became even a higher priority in my life. And yeah, it's been, you know, the rest of it, I this, and Joe certainly knows this, that all this other stuff we do, we talk about broadcasting and social media and acting, and you know, who cares? I mean, when it's all said and done, the ones who know us best, our kids and our spouses and friends and relatives, they're the ones who tell our story when it's all said and done, or they're the ones who tell it accurately. And whatever the fans think, and although I think, you know, the world of whatever fans I have, you know, they don't know me the way that the people who are near me do. And I hope it's a good story when they tell it one day.
Mm-hmm.
It will be, because there's a respect that your girls have for you that I see just all over them, the way they look at you. When they come visit us in the booth. I mean, I haven't seen them as much over the last couple of years because of COVID, and you know, they have their own lives. But I just don't think we all have to worry, but I think you've put enough in to where you don't have to worry about them making decisions that are going to negatively affect them or you. And I think that's always the other layer to this. And it's what all of our kids have to deal with, and I'm not whining about it, and I'm certainly not making this a thing, but people know in Dallas, that's Troy Aikman's kid. People know in St. Louis, oh, that's Joe Buck's kid, that's Jack Buck's grandkid. I always knew that wherever I went, even in high school parties and whatever, I was lugging around a little bit of my dad with me, and I didn't want to be the jerk getting in a fight, getting arrested, because I knew it would not look good for my dad. And that kept me on that straight and narrow path. Now you can do the other stuff. I mean, Oliver, you were wilder certainly than me as a kid, but you came around, and I would say the same thing about you that I just said about Troy. I know you as a great dad first and foremost, and then a very talented, funny, good guy, secondly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, for me, it was a different time when I was 15, 16 years old and just crazy out of my mind in Los Angeles. I mean, there was no social media, there were no cell phones. So it was much easier for me to not embarrass my parents, you know, but it's true. I mean, there is that factor, you know. I mean, even in my little neighborhood, my kids are doing Ding Dong Ditch and they're putting tape on the street, and the cars think that, you know, they roll over the tape and it sounds like a flat tire, and they've gained this reputation in a way in my little neighborhood. And I've heard the murmurs of, oh, it's the Oliver Hudson, it's like this celebrity, his kids, you know, these asshole kids think they can fucking do anything. I'm like, shut the fuck up. Like, they're children, you know. But Troy, when you were, why did you want to become a dad so early? And I only ask this because I was the same. I had the same situation. Like I, in my early 20s, I knew that I wanted to be a dad. And I think there was some subconscious reason for me because my dad left when I was a kid. You know, when I was about 11 or 12, he actually was out of my life. Kurt was in my life as my stepdad, but you know, there's something about your biological not really being there. And I think there was this unconscious sort of part of me that wanted to become a father to break this cycle because my dad's dad, my grandfather left my dad. I mean, it was just this sort of linear situation where I just didn't want that to happen anymore. And so that was, I think, an unconscious decision for me to say, I want to have kids so I can be the best fucking dad that I can be.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know where exactly it came for me. I know what Joe's saying when he was talking about being Jack Buck's son and Trudy and Natalie and not wanting to reflect poorly on their father and make sure that they kind of towed the line a little bit. You know, I did as a kid because not because my dad was a celebrity, but because he'd just beat my ass as my toad. I mean, it was pretty clear what would happen. So I don't think, though, you know, I've got a good relationship with my father. He was tough. I mean, really tough. You know, he demanded a lot from the time I was real young. I mean, he treated me like a grown man, you know, as far back as I can ever remember. I had no restrictions. I never had a curfew. I never had anything like that. But the expectations were always there. So, you know, yeah, I could do all these things, but you better not get in trouble and you better make sure you're doing it the right way and all that. So I never took advantage of that freedom that I had. And when we moved to Oklahoma, I moved to Oklahoma from Southern California. I grew up in Cerritos until I was 12 and then moved out on a farm. And the first day that I arrived, I was roofing our house. We built our house and then I was, you know, getting rock and I was hauling hay. So all of a sudden I went from a city kid to being out in the country and a lot of expectations. I mean, I played American Legion baseball and I would haul hay right up until I had to leave for the game. And then I'd come home and it might be 11 at night and I'd be out in the fields hauling hay until 4 a.m. until whenever we got the hay in. I mean, it was just kind of, you know, and I was young. So maybe in some ways, some of my childhood was taken away because of that, but I wouldn't have traded it. And I just
that's
know
a double-edged that sword. I mean, that's your work ethic right there. I mean, you probably owe that, owe your career and owe, you know, obviously there's talent, but you got to work. I mean, that has to be instilled
from
those moments.
There's no doubt. And so, you know, yeah, I think that part of me, there's no question that I wouldn't have got where I got as an athlete if it weren't for my father. And so I think there was a part of me always deep down that always kind of wanted to prove to him that I was as tough as he was, which is impossible. I mean, this guy's I could tell story after story about him, but anyway, so having kids was a really important thing for me. And I had the two girls, and I don't know what it would have been like to have a son. I'm sure I would have loved it. It would have been awesome. I'm done having kids, but I've always said if I were to have kids, I'd want more girls because I love the father-daughter relationship. I just love that. Every morning when I see them, they come up, they give me a hug and a kiss. Every time I, you know, it's never changed from the time they were 1 years old to now 20 and 19. That dynamic has never changed. You know, God bless Joe, you know, with the young boys. He's talking about how he hasn't seen my girls in a few years. I've still not seen his, although I feel like I do know him. I feel like I'm related to him because of Instagram. I still have not seen them in person. I've not met them yet. And what are they, 2.5 now?
They're 3.5.
3.5. Holy
they're 3.5. Yeah. It's I know.
I have a driver's license before I get a chance to
speak. I'll bring them on the road as long as they can sleep in your room. How about that? You can meet him. You can hang with him. You can get all Blake and Wyatt you want. The road is going to be my place to sleep in 2021. It is the only uninterrupted, oh my God, I just got a great night's sleep part of my life is being on the road, which part of me, it makes me sick that I'm going to be gone as much as I'm going to be gone. But the other side is I'm going to be gone pretty often.
Not too bad.
No, it's not too bad.
You're on that Zions program. You didn't even know it.
No, I'm going to be like Madden. I'm going to get a bus and just travel around the country, and I'm going to leave one game and just drive to the next. And I don't care how it's. I got to be there in 3 days. I know somebody
who did that. It worked for him. I mean, yeah. I think that'd be good.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to think about that. I'm sure Michelle will be all.
Got to come up with a name for it, though. We got to come up with something catchy.
Like as opposed to the Madden Cruiser.
Yeah.
The Buck Bus.
The Buck Bus. Yeah.
The Buck Buggy.
The Buck Buggy is rolling into Irving, Texas. Where, if you're enjoying this episode of Daddy Issues, don't keep it to yourself. Please share the love and tell a friend about Daddy Issues and go subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. We beg
you. That's right. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up right after the break.
So we're not going to keep you forever. It is 06. Oliver's got to take his middle kid to school. Or who's going next? Is it Wilder?
I got Bodie at 10:45, and then I got to come back and get Wilder at noon. It's just orientation, yeah. So I got to, you know. It's like that.
Absolutely. So are you ready, Troy, for his? I think people are under the false impression that we just show up and do games.
Including our bosses.
There's no doubt about that. But it's, you know, it's a little bit intimidating. We're sitting here talking in the last real week of not having at worst or at best one game a week, as opposed, you know, some weeks there are two, and then I'm mixing in baseball in October. And it's all that travel. I know you're excited about being an empty nester during all that, but it's a big undertaking, and there's a lot to dive into and digest, and it's gonna be another long year.
Yeah, it is a lot. And this Thursday Sunday schedule, as you well know, it's a grind. It takes you know, there's not a lot of life outside of getting ready for games and then calling the games and travel and everything. It's a wonderful job. It's a great job. I don't know about you, but I thought that when we did Thursday Night Football, I really thought I'd do it 1 year and then that would kind of be it. I never expected that here we'd be going into our fourth season and still doing Thursday night. I know that once we get back to one game a week next year, that it'll feel so different. I mean, it'll feel like a vacation, you know, when we're in the middle of the year. But no, I'm excited about it. You know, I was just kind of thinking about the start of the year. And, you know, as you know, with the hurricane that hit there in New Orleans, the Saints are here in Dallas practicing. And here we are, you know, like 16 years to the day that they're going through it all over again. And now they're going to have a new quarterback. You know, Drew Brees had just come to New Orleans along with Sean Payton when they got hit last time.
And think about that.
Crazy.
Yeah, now you got Jameis Winston who will be taking over, you know, on the heels of another hurricane. There, the city, you know, praying for all those people there. They're without power, and who knows if they're going to even have the stadium up and running in time for that game. I mean, I don't even know what might happen with because we're so Oliver. We've got the Packers at New Orleans Week One in the big sun late afternoon window, and hopefully they'll get a chance. Hopefully they'll be able to go back. That'll mean good things for New Orleans and, you know, everything else.
Yes.
But we don't know. But yeah, I'm excited about it. I always get excited. I got excited as a player at the start of the football season, and I'm excited as a broadcaster. It's just, wouldn't finally stop talking about it. And now let's go see what some of these teams have.
What happens if one of you wants to retire? You know what I mean? Like, is there ever talk about this? It's been 20 years. Do you guys do that together? Is there any world where Troy is like, I'm out, and Joe's like, well, I guess I'm going to stay, you know, and then all of a sudden Dak Prescott is your guy?
Yeah. No. I can only work with Dallas Cowboys quarterbacks. That's in my contract. I don't know. It would suck, but he's got to manage his life, and I've got to manage mine. It's just worked out so well to this point. It just would be, and I've said it. I mean, Troy's kicked the tires on opportunities and continues to. I do too, and thank God we've been able to just always kind of come back at the start of every season and go back to work together. But yeah, I think if Troy said, I'm out, you know, I would keep. I have to keep working. I got too many people that need me to keep working, and vice versa.
Yeah, and I think I think you can comment on this too, Oliver, as far as your situation. But I think that when I'm 54 years old, and so I look at it and think, how long do I want to do it? At what age do I want to stop being in front of the camera? You know, do I see myself broadcasting when I'm 70 years old? I mean, I don't, but then all of a sudden those years sneak up on you, and are you really ready to walk away when that time comes? And that's what I thought as a player. I mean, I remember when I first got into the league, I thought, man, 10 years would be great. And then you get to 10 years and you think, man, I'm not anywhere near ready to quit playing, And mm-hmm. So, but I'm sure you go through that exercise as well, as far as, how long do you want to do it? Or there are other things in your life that are important, So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. I mean, there's the love, and then there's the sort of financial obligation that I have to sort of my family. You know what I mean? I always say to Aaron, my wife, I'm like, man, if I just sort of hit the lottery, half a billion or whatever the lottery is, would I keep doing it, or would I just, give a bunch away and then have the greatest time with my kids and my wife?
Yeah.
You know, heck, I don't know.
Heck yeah.
I don't know. I love what I do, but, I like having fun.
By the way, I think Erin was a rock star on Family Feud. I thought she kind of carried it for the...
She did.
She did.
For the Hudson clan.
She really did. She was great.
Yeah, she was good. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, wouldn't you be sad, Troy, if you, you did Celebrity Family Feud and nobody in your family wanted to go on camera with you, like obviously what happened with Oliver? Like Kate said no, and Goldie said no, and Kurt said no, and Wyatt said no. And
I didn't even ask them because I've had enough rejection in my life. I don't need a Family Feud rejection,
Yeah.
I don't remember though, like they had Joe introduce his group.
Yeah.
Maybe I missed it. Did you introduce your group?
I did. They didn't air it.
Oh, okay, because I thought, well, who are these people? And I finally kind of, realized that, okay, well, Aaron's the wife, and then, then there were some others that, fit into the whole thing.
It wasn't even said, I was like, these are my friends, and blah, blah, blah. But now it just looks like maybe these are cousins of mine or some shit. I have no idea what people
You know why it happened that way? We said this before you hopped on. Because they won every head-to-head matchup up at the start of each round. We never played. So if I didn't introduce my family, including my poor sister, who never spoke a word on this show, which is this was her the highlight of her life.
Was she on it?
She don't say that. Don't say that. If I don't introduce my family, you would have never seen them.
Right.
It's so funny, and people think I'm being a smartass when I say it, and I'm not, because he's 2 years older than me. When I was really paying attention to the NFL, Troy Aikman was Troy Aikman. Do I remember Bradshaw? Sure. Do I remember the 80s and Montana and all that? Yes. But by the time I really cared about covering or looking at the NFL with a discerning eye, Troy Aikman was Troy Aikman. And somebody brought it up on a podcast I did about our relationship. And if I ever called games that Aikman did, well, Aikman's Cowboys were so friggin' good that every week they got Madden and Summerall as their broadcast crew. But my first year or second year, I'm working with Tim Green, and Troy's, let's say the Cowboys weren't that good that year. And I think Troy found out or figured out that the end was near when the guys covering his NFL game were Joe Buck and Tim Green. He walked into the production meeting like, who in the hell are these two people that I'm about to sit down and tell secrets to?
Well, we always had Madden and Summerall. I mean, it was pretty much every week, unless we were playing on Monday night. And then we had Al and Dan and Frank Gifford and, you know, that crew and whoever was doing Monday night that particular year. And I remember when I'd walk in for a production meeting and it would be Stockton and Millen, I'd kind of be taken aback because I knew that that was their number two team. And I was like, hey, well, where's Madden and Summerall this week? And if they weren't doing us, they were covering the 49ers is typically how it worked. But I mean, if we had 16 games in a regular season, I bet 12 of them were Madden and Summerall covering them. And then the one year it was towards the end and we weren't very good. And it was a reminder when I walked in and I don't know what number crew you guys were. Joe, I don't even remember the production meeting. Joe always told me when we got paired together in the broadcast booth, he said, you know, I covered one of your games one year. I said, you did? I mean, did I come in for the production meeting? He goes, oh yeah, you came in. And it was when we were playing Cincinnati. I said, I did. I don't remember that. He goes, yeah, you weren't real pleased about being in there and having to talk.
It was so great. Oliver, we sit down like, so for people who don't know, if you're a great team, you're going to get the top broadcast crew for each network. Well, that's why they had Madden and Summerall every once in a while, the number two team. Well, we show up, we were the number three or number four team. And we walk in there and Tim Green, who's a wonderful guy and going through his own battles right now, starts in like kind of just shooting the shit with Troy, like, hey, what's going on? And Troy's like, not much. So you doing all right? And Troy just cuts him off. He's like, look, do you have any questions about the game? Because I'm not going to play the, hey, what's going on game right now. I'm like, oh, shit. And so then here we are X number of years later, paired together. And from day one, I was asking the guy favors to come to St. Louis to do my Children's Hospital golf tournament. He was all in. So I saw Troy the player who was intense, and I've seen Troy the broadcaster who's just as giving a guy as
you know,
he could have.
Oliver, it's like when you're on the phone with someone. I'm not a phone guy, but when I am on the phone, somebody calls and you answer the phone. I mean, I want to know why they called, and then let's get to it and then get off the phone. But then when they say, hey, so – you know, what else is going on? You're like, really? What else? Like, we're going to make things up for conversation. I mean,
yeah.
So knowing that story. So when I got into broadcasting, I said already, I was the number two guy when I first started. It was really, really important to me to be on a crew to where when players walked in, they respected you because they knew it was at least a bigger game. You know, I wasn't doing the number one game, but I was doing the very next game, which meant a lot. So these guys that are doing the games between teams that are really struggling, I mean, it's hard. It's hard on them. It's harder on them than it is on us doing the games that we do. It's, you know, and it's just, it's a tough situation on them. And especially when you're doing games with teams that just aren't playing very well. It's hard to be positive. You know, I mean, when we cover a game, there are two good teams that are generally having really good years. So we get to kind of celebrate that a little bit. We don't have to be negative and just talk about all the things that have gone wrong. And so it becomes a much tougher job, I think, for the crews that are lower in the ranking than the one or two.
Who's number two behind you guys?
Well, this year it was last year. It was Kevin Burkhardt and Daryl Johnston. This year it'll be Kevin Burkhardt and Greg Olson, who just retired. He was with Seattle last year, Carolina a lot of years in Chicago, and really talented guy, great guy, and he'll be the number two guy this year in his first, much like me, in his first season of broadcasting.
Okay.
Yeah. If you get a minute, go on his Instagram and what they've been through as a family and a child who's just had a heart transplant. And it's just, and his attitude is phenomenal. And I just don't know how that just doesn't wear the life out of you. You don't know this, Troy, but Oliver is shooting a show that you and I are going to promote on Fox. He's now Fox family shooting a show.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing a show in Albuquerque. It's an hour show. It's called The Cleaning Lady, and it's sort of like a mob Vegas-y drama. I play like an FBI special agent who operates in the gray area. You know, he's not necessarily on the up and up. But the minute I got the gig, the first thing I thought of was Buck. I'm like, oh shit, it airs in January, I think, during the playoffs. I'm like, hey, maybe he will, for the first time in our friendship, be promoting something on air that you guys will be talking about. That would be
awesome.
Such a treat for me.
So you're filming, you've already filmed it?
No, I'm shooting now. I'm back and forth from New Mexico to LA. You know, just flying a bunch. But it's good.
And home, Ollie, to take your three kids in this staggered.
That's right. Which I got to do right now.
You got to go take your kids to school.
I know.
But
I
home do. Right now to be there for day one. You remember those days, Troy, day one of school, and how scary and exciting that was for both parent and kid.
It's the best. It's awesome. And then it's gone before you know it.
Yeah, my kid just walked past me, and he's heavy Egyptian musk oil. I mean, it just literally, I can't get it out of my nostrils. He's
got a kid, Troy, that just went through puberty that is wants to wear cologne to school in eighth grade, but Oliver didn't get him cologne. He got him Egyptian musk oil.
Is that the one who sometimes makes a cameo when you're singing at the coffee pot?
Yes. They're just totally unfazed by my insanity. My whole family is. They just are like, yeah, it's dad.
I can tell. They just kind of, they're used to it. You know,
they're very used to
it. Meander around.
They do. They just have their morning, and then I'm the one sort of doing some sort of an insane bit.
Troy, good to see you, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, you got it, man.
Thanks, Troy. Thanks that was awesome. Me. All right, brother. All right. Thank you.
See y'all.
Thanks. Later, see you, man. Ollie, just hang up, buddy. Go take.
I gotta
take
go.
Those precious.
I love you, man.
School.
That was awesome. God, Troy is cool. Jesus, he's cool. I love him.
He is. He has more integrity than anybody I know.
I wish we were. I want to be friends. I'm gonna. You know.
He'd be good for you. He'd be good sounding board for you.
Yeah, I think so. I think we'd go deep.
But just don't start any conversation with. So what's up?
Yeah, I definitely won't.
What else is going on?
I'm coming with a plan. You know what I mean? I'm not even going to say his name. He'll answer the phone and be like, okay, so here's what's happening right now. I've got this, and this, and this.
That's it.
I'm like him, though. I'm not a phone guy. I don't like to talk on the phone. And Aaron does. Like, sometimes Aaron is just like, so, like, what's up? I'm like, what do you mean, what's up? I've been with you for 20 years. Like, what's up? Like, what do we got? Let's figure this out.
Why are you calling me? Yeah. How did you get this number?
Yeah, Erin loves the phone. She's like, sometimes we'll just sit on the phone and no words will be exchanged. And I'm like, hello? She's like, hey, like, what are you doing? I'm like, babe, I don't know. I mean, I'm here. Do you need something? All right, I got to go. I love you.
All right. Bye. See you. Great job. See you. Bye. Bye.
Bye-bye. Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margo Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.